Saudi Arabia carries out fresh airstrikes on Yemen, killing at least 7 civilians in the southern province of Shatwa. The relatives of the victims of a U.S. drone strike that killed 10 Afghan civilians demand a face-to-face apology and compensation. Russia registers nearly 800 new deaths from the novel coronavirus and over 20,000 new infections, the highest tally in 4 weeks. Thank you for joining us. Beginning with our top story, Saudi Arabia has carried out yet another deadly airstrike in Yemen, killing at least 7 civilians in the country's south. The attack happened in the town of Malha in Shabwa province. The victims lost their lives after their car came under attack. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. Since then, hundreds of thousands have lost their lives and many more have been displaced. The years-long aggression has also targeted the country's infrastructure, leaving the Yemeni people in abject misery. The United Nations has called the situation in Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Our correspondent Abdullatif Al-Washili joined us earlier from Yemen's capital Sana'a with more details on the latest Saudi aggression against the country.
7 people were killed today, including a woman and 3 children, in a Saudi airstrike in east of Yemen in Shabwa province and exactly in Malha directorate. These people were on the ride heading to maybe one of the families, but they couldn't be due to the Saudi airstrike. They were killed, all of them, 7 people. This is what Saudi Arabia has been doing in Yemen for the 7th year, killing women and the children. Tens of thousands, actually, of women and the children were killed during 7 years of a deadly war and the blockade. The life in Yemen is really... people are today in Yemen are suffering from a lot of aspects due to the Saudi-led war and blockade imposed on the country. We have a severe fuel crisis. We have a collapsed healthcare system. This is the result of the Saudi-led war and blockade. Yemenis today are seeking to be the victorious one. They want to force Saudi Arabia to stop its war and a blockade that it has imposed on the country 7 years ago.
Families of the victims of a U.S. drone attack in the Afghan capital are demanding a face-to-face apology. They're also seeking compensation for the strike that claimed 10 civilian lives, including 7 children. On Friday, a top U.S. general admitted that the August 29th attack did not kill any terrorists. The general said the U.S. intelligence had, quote, reasonable certainty that the suspected location was a Daesh position where terrorists were planning an attack on Kabul airport. The U.S. had said it was retaliating against a deadly bombing of the airport 3 days earlier. The attack, which was claimed by Daesh, killed over 180 people, including 13 American service members. The strike came as Afghan and foreign nationals were rushing to leave Afghanistan. President Ebrahim Raisi has hailed Iran's gaining full membership of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a diplomatic success.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was a strategic move and a diplomatic success.
Raisi says the membership establishes a strong economic link leading to Iran's access to Asia's economic infrastructure and its sustainable resources. He made the remarks upon arrival in Tehran after his 3-day visit to the Tajik capital. Raisi attended the 21st summit of the SCO in Dushanbe, where Iran's full membership in the organization was approved. The president also spoke of Iran's stance toward Afghanistan that was mentioned in the sidelines of the summit. During a press conference before leaving Dushanbe, Raisi stressed that Iran would not allow terrorist groups like Daesh to establish a presence near its border with Afghanistan.
The U.S.-trained Daesh terrorist group has moved into Afghanistan after committing atrocities in Syria and Iraq. The presence of Daesh in Afghanistan is dangerous, not only for Afghanistan, but also for the region. We will not allow terrorist organizations like Daesh to set up bases on our border and strike other countries in the region.
In the joint presser, presidents of Iran and Tajikistan called for an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan following the Taliban's takeover of the country. Raisi noted that a government comprised of only one political or ethnic group cannot resolve the problems in the country. Imam Ali Rahman also said peace and stability should be restored in the war-ravaged country for the sake of regional security. He warned that an escalation of violence could lead to a humanitarian disaster for Afghanistan and turn it into a hub for terrorism in the region. New details have emerged on Israel's assassination of Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. U.S. media say Israel's spying agency Mossad had been monitoring and wanted to kill Iran's top nuclear scientist for years. The report also points to the significant role former U.S. President Donald Trump played in facilitating the attack. Israel reportedly used an AI-assisted sniper machine gun placed in the way of the Fakhrizadeh's convoy to assassinate him. Israel had tried to kill him in 2009, but the mission had failed and been called off after the Iranian intelligence discovered the plot. Meanwhile, families of five Iranian nuclear scientists assassinated over the past decade have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government. Well, Iran has become the ninth member of the influential Shanghai Cooperation Organization. The decision was made during the SCO's 21st annual meeting in Tajikistan's capital, Dushanbe. Tehran's message at the summit was embracing multilateralism to counter regional and global crises.
The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, has approved documents for Iran's full membership at the Eurasian Political, Economic, and Security Alliance. The decision came as the 21st summit of the organization opened in Dushanbe earlier in the day. The Islamic Republic joined the SCO in 2005 as an observer state.
SCO, with the current membership, covers close to 50% of the world population and about one-third of the world's GDP. Being a member of this organization will take a lot of pressure away in terms of Western sanctions, Western impositions, monetary manipulations via the US dollar as a remedy for payment. No more.
Leaders from eight member states and four observer states attended the annual summit in Tajikistan's capital on Friday, with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping addressing it virtually along with Russian president. Xi criticized sanctions imposed on world economic exchanges, urging the SCO members to stay united against attacks by other countries. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi and his counterpart from Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Belarus, Pakistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan attended in person. Addressing the summit, President Raisi said the world today has entered a new era when hegemony and unilateralism are declining.
The world is entering a new era with a new order. Domination and unilateralism are on the decline. International order is moving toward multipolarization and redistribution of power in favor of independent states.
The Iranian president also underlined that sanctions are preventing regional cooperation and urged the SCO to define mechanisms to fight these challenges.
The SCO organization now has three countries targeted by U.S. sanctions. Iran's admission was a natural consequence of Washington's aggressive maximum pressure campaign against these countries. All the three countries have stated that the days of U.S. unilateralism are over.
In his address at the SCO summit, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi described sanctions as economic terrorism and the hegemonic power's most important tool to impose their own will on the others. He warned that unilateral sanctions are not limited to one country, but as it has become clear in recent years, they include more independent countries, particularly the SCO member states. Two key members of the alliance, Russia and China, have also come under sanctions from the West. Ties between Washington and Beijing deteriorated after former U.S. President Donald Trump took office in 2017, waging an economic war against China. While many expected the current administration of Joe Biden to mark a departure from Trump's hawkish policies, it adopted a tougher stance against China and Russia, imposing several rounds of sanctions on them on various pretexts.
Western trade currency restrictions do not exist in the SCO member countries. This will drastically reduce the potential for Western sanctions and will increase, on the other hand, Iran's potential to deal with the East, for example, or especially China and Russia, entering partnership agreements with these and other SCO countries, benefiting from comparative advantages.
At the end of the summit, SCO member states signed the Dushanbe Declaration, in which they stress a position to interference under the excuse of counterterrorism or human rights, or solving key international and regional issues through small cliques, ideology, or confrontation mentality. They also agreed on strengthening cooperation in cracking down on terrorism, extremism, and separatism, and reached a consensus in supporting building an inclusive government in Afghanistan.
New details have emerged on Israel's assassination of Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. U.S. media say Israel's spying agency Mossad had been monitoring and wanted to kill Iran's top nuclear scientist for years. The report also points to the significant role former U.S. President Donald Trump played in facilitating the attack. Israel reportedly used an AI-assisted sniper machine gun placed in the way of the Fakhrizadeh's convoy to assassinate him. Israel had tried to kill him in 2009, but the mission had failed and been called off after the Iranian intelligence discovered the plot. Meanwhile, families of five Iranian nuclear scientists assassinated over the past decade have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government.
Mossad. This comment was made by families of the five slain nuclear scientists who were allegedly assassinated by Israeli agents. Now the households of the victims have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for its support for Tel Aviv and what people here call terrorist activities against Iran.
I believe the reason that they did this in front of my eyes and my mother's eyes was to terrorize people. That's what terrorists do.
We have already gotten too late into this legal proceeding. They killed my husband 12 years ago, and I still feel the pain. It's not easy to forget such a great loss. The point is, America and Israel do not feel sorry for this, and that's why we ask Iranian and international judicial systems to bring the perpetrators to justice.
Iran does not recognize Israel as a country. This is why the case is not directly aimed at Israel, but is targeting the U.S. as a supporting force behind Tel Aviv. If succeeded, the move will lead to the freezing of American assets in foreign countries.
We are now waiting for the verdict of Iran's court for international affairs. We will follow up the case in countries that maintain judicial cooperation with Iran. There, we will demand that U.S. assets be blocked and transferred as compensation to the families of the victims. This is to remind the criminal governments that their crimes will not go unanswered.
Israel has a history of targeted killing of Iranian nuclear scientists since 2010. While Tel Aviv has not commented on any of the assassinations, its footsteps can be traced in all of the incidents. In this video, recorded in 2018, ex-Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gives the game away.
Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
Less than 2 years after this comment, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was a key Iranian nuclear scientist, was assassinated. Over the years, different American and Israeli officials have spoken openly about, quote, taking down the nuts and bolts of Iran's nuclear industry. The plaintiffs here say the U.S. was trying to do so by killing Iranian nuclear scientists, and today by enforcing the so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. But they say both measures have so far failed, and the West is now urging Iran to sit and talk about its nuclear program in Vienna to revive the 2015 nuclear pact.
Plaintiffs here hope that their lawsuit against the U.S. will break the chain of Washington's targeting of the Iranian scientific community. But they say the underlying messages are even more important, as the case lays bare the U.S.'s double standards with regards to human rights. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Lebanon has called on the UN Security Council to examine whether Israel has violated the country's sovereignty. This amid disputes over energy resources in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea. Lebanese Speaker of Parliament, Nabih Berri, says Israel has violated negotiations by signing contracts for drilling under the disputed waters. Berri described Tel Aviv's continuation of the practice as an act of aggression and a threat to peace. Energy resources in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea have been a source of dispute. Egypt, Cyprus, Greece, Israel, Italy, Jordan, Palestine, and France all claim parts of the prolific area. Several countries and entities have already started drilling to extract gas. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility for an attack on a major natural gas pipeline southeast of the Syrian capital. The group said in a statement that its forces were able to plant and detonate explosives on the pipeline feeding the Tishrin and Deir Ali power plants. The Syrian electricity minister said the attack caused the station to go out of service temporarily. However, the Syrian Ministry of Oil announced that the gas pipeline at the Deir Ali power station has returned to operation upon completion of repairs. The station southeast of Damascus generates half of Syria's electricity needs. Russia has reported 799 fatalities from the coronavirus over the past day, as the overall death toll there edges closer to 200,000. The country also registered over 20,000 new infections, the highest number in 4 weeks. It has so far confirmed over 7.2 million cases. More than 40 million Russians have been fully vaccinated. That is less than a third of the population. Meanwhile, the UK has recorded 164 more COVID-related deaths and over 30,000 new cases. This pushes the total number of infections there to above 7.4 million. The overall death toll tops 135,000. Over 44 million Britons, or two-thirds of the population, have received two doses of the vaccine. Well, that does it for this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
For 1,500 Palestinian people in the Al-Bustan quarter of Silwan threatened with displacement and demolition, the pile of rubble represents the remnants of a much larger fight against the Israeli regime's efforts to expel Palestinians from the area, says Kelly Kunzel, writer in an article titled Zionist Regime Bulldozers Bring Heartbreak to Silwan. Stay tuned for the second part of this article, please. From 1991 to 2019, the Israeli regime-controlled Al-Quds municipality issued more than 21,000 permits for the construction of Jewish settlement units in East Al-Quds, while less than 10,000 were allotted for Palestinians. The number of structures demolished in East Al-Quds rose by 44% in June this year, compared with the previous 5 months. Illegal touristic endeavors in Silwan, pioneered by Ilad, also include excavations for the City of David Park project. The underground tunnels have left Palestinian homes in the area crumbling since they were first dug in 2000. Hapler, the director of the Committee Against Demolition, said, "Archaeology is part of the Judaization process also. You can dig and destroy all the layers until you get down to the ancient Israelite layer to show the tourists. In this way, they can erase all the Palestinian history down to the history Israel wants to highlight." The most recent demolitions in Silwan came after the municipality rejected new zoning plans put forth for the third time by residents. Fakhri Abu Diab, a prominent community activist in Silwan, told the electronic Intifada. Residents worked with Yusuf Jabarin, an urban planning professor at Technion in Haifa, to develop a new outline for the neighborhood. Its purpose was to allow optimal space for development in order to accommodate a growing population, as per spoken agreement with the municipality to extend the demolition freeze. The neighborhood collectively spent $500,000 on plans, Abu Diab said, putting forward a different design each time. When residents pressed the municipality on why the outlines continued to be rejected, they were only told that the ruling came from the Israeli regime's interior ministry. Abu Diab said, "This proves that the permits are just excuses. It is clearly a political situation." Zionist regime authorities are also threatening to demolish Abu Diab's home in Al Bustan, where his wife, 5 children, and 12 grandchildren live. The Israeli regime authorities denied Abu Diab building permits 7 times, forcing him to build a 2-room extension to his own home without Israeli permits. Despite the addition, living conditions are still cramped. "If you will go inside and look at it, it will look like a refugee camp with so many people. It's not enough room at all. But we have no other option," Abu Diab said. Abu Diab added, "Am I going to sleep in the streets just so they can build a garden over my house? Every day here we say this may be the last night sleeping in our homes. Israeli regime forces may come tomorrow and destroy it. If we don't do it ourselves, the municipality will charge us 1,000 shekels per meter of what they demolish." Since June 29th, Israeli regime forces have attacked Palestinians protesting the demolition with rubber-coated steel bullets and tear gas, injuring at least 19. In scenes reminiscent of the ongoing situation in adjacent neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, where Israeli regime forces have continued to brutally police Palestinian residents protesting a complete takeover of their homes by settlers, Silwan was also declared a closed military zone on July 20th. The Zionist regime forces installed checkpoints on roads entering and exiting the neighborhood, further restricting freedom of movement for Palestinians in the city. Abu Diab told the electronic Intifada, "The situation is very awful. Every day someone is arrested. Every day these are clashes. Police are giving fines, and every other day there is the sound of rubber bullets. I wouldn't let my kids go out after 7 p.m. because they may be arrested or shot. So desperate is the situation that Palestinians are demolishing their own homes to avoid being landed with a bill if the Zionist regime carried out the demolition." Thank you. So far this year, 45% of demolitions have been carried out by their owners, a 27% increase from the previous 5 years. The increase has been attributed to new legislation that gives the Israeli regime controlled Al-Quds municipality the power to exert pressure on families to demolish their own structures, according to the UN monitoring group OCHA. The Zionist regime has demolished and confiscated more than 670 Palestinian structures in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of the year, displacing nearly 1,000 people. Almost half of those displaced were children. This includes 116 structures in the occupied East Al-Quds, where more than 200 people have been displaced. Residents have engaged in public art projects in the neighborhood and communal dinners as another form of protest. Amani Odeh also organizes weekly gatherings for youth activists. Odeh held back tears as she told the teens at one such recent meeting, "There is an old folk tale that says Silwan is a well that you drink from and forget your heartbreak."
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and how about pondering another bezel of wisdom from Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him, the seventh Imam of the household of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The light of the body is in the eyes. If the sight is luminous, the whole body will be bright. The light of the spirit is in the brain, in the mind. If a person is really intelligent, he will acknowledge his Lord. If he acknowledges his Lord, he will clearly see his religion. If he ignores the affairs of his Lord, he will be having no religion. Like the body that does not live without a living soul, the religion does not live without true conviction. True conviction is proven only through the mind.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. A program dedicated to the memory of a great leader and the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May God bless his soul. We got to the point in this program where we've reached a stage where we've discussed the fact that Imam Khomeini, for those who don't have a belief in religion, will be an enigma. For those of us who do believe in Islam, he's not an enigma. He's the living essence and embodiment of the message of Islam. Dr. Hasni, very well, warm welcome to you on the program. Salam, and thanks
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, really, we've enjoyed your contributions in the previous programs as well. But Dr. Hasni, as you quite rightly point out, and as we have said over and over again, you said that Imam Khomeini, a great man like Imam Khomeini, is like a mountain. And you said we have to stand back and take the tapestry of the context in which this mountain is located and look at the features of this mountain as well, in terms of its height, in terms of its appearance, in terms of its color. We talked about the fact that Imam Khomeini is a mountain.
You know, the problem with us is this.
Mm.
We only care about all five senses, you know?
That's right, absolutely.
In order to understand something beyond that.
Beyond that.
You have to go and try very hard in order to understand.
Well, let's go beyond
the
that.
Significance.
Let's go beyond that. Let's do it. Let's make an attempt, even in our own humble way. As I say, we are not in any way going to fathom Imam Khomeini, because he was a man of God, a true man of God, the living, the way of life of Islam as it should be lived by all of us. And as I say, I myself am personally sometimes ashamed that we are not the kind of Muslims we ought to be in terms of following the legacy of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, let alone following an example like Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. But let's put it in this context. Let's now look at something that, as you see, is beyond those five senses. Because there is something about Imam Khomeini which is beyond those five senses. We talked about that he was speaking from a time, because he speaks from the timelessness of the Quran. Because you told us there's no boundary here, isn't there? It's limitless. So if we want to touch this hikmah, if we want to touch this wisdom, I want to look at the fact that Imam Khomeini has said things which, under normal circumstances, and I mean in the context that many scholars have not said anything different from what Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, may God bless his soul, has said at the end of his life, in terms of the legacy of the Prophet being that I leave two weighty things, two valuable things, the Holy Quran and the infallibles, my family. Now, many scholars of the Ahlul Bayt, great scholars of the Ahlul Bayt, great philosophers from the school of Ahlul Bayt have mentioned this. But there are other schools as well, aren't there? There are other schools in the Muslim world as well, which also have their own reasoning, their own philosophy, their own understanding of the Quran. And they don't quite look at things the way we understand them from the school of Ahlul Bayt. And yet Imam Khomeini says the same thing, but the impact is entirely different. Other scholars have said before, but we've had many arguments about this, and there have been many controversial programs dedicated to this subject, that whether this is a Sahih, whether this is mutawatir, is this something that really the Prophet was going to do, because he asked for a pen and paper in the last days of his life so that the Ummah, the Muslim Ummah, wouldn't go astray. Yet Imam Khomeini has done something which even I myself am puzzled by, that he has stated the same controversial statement, which, let it be known to the listeners, is not accepted by many parts of the Islamic Ummah. And yet, you know, we discuss this aspect of the
walayat. It's not the status quo.
Yeah, it's not the status quo. And we discuss the fact about the importance of walayat, but many don't accept it. Mm-hmm. Yet Imam Khomeini does the same thing. And we see his posters with the Rushdie affair. You remember that, mm-hmm. in 89, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The Rushdie affair, which was a complete attempt to blaspheme the Quran, to blaspheme the Prophet by the enemies of Islam. And yet we see the fact that Sunni brethren are holding up the posters of Imam Khomeini in light of the fact that he has said something very controversial and for many schools of thought is very difficult to swallow even to this day. And yet we are now seeing the fruits of what Imam Khomeini is saying. May God bless his soul, through the Islamic awakening. Tell us, brother, how did that happen? How does this dynamic work in this context where other scholars, may I say this, unfortunately, couldn't get that across?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brother Ejaz, again, so many different subjects. First thing first.
Sure.
Talking about the legacy. Mm. The legacy it is, the legacy it was.
Mm-hmm.
The legacy lives on.
And what it will be, what it will become.
My point is this. Mm. We always say Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him. This is his last name, referring to the piece of land, the geography that I was talking
sure.
to you about,
sure.
the last program. But I'm asking you this. What was his short name, first name?
Ruhullah.
There it? You go.
Yeah.
You always say Eloquently Imam Khomeini, put. Peace be upon him.
Yeah, yeah.
His first name was Ruhullah. What does it mean?
Spirit
of God.
God. And this is also a title of a great prophet in the Quran.
Exactly. You see?
Mm.
And a title for a new book to be written.
Yeah.
That's what we can talk about Imam Khomeini. Mm. Imam Khomeini lives within us, every single of us.
Yeah, he does.
The hope, the belief,
Thief.
The struggle,
mm.
the trying so hard to guide every single person on the planet. You mentioned the word Rushdie, supposed to mean guidance, and it wasn't.
Misguided.
Just like Pharaoh claimed to take the children of Israel on the right path, to the right path, and show them the promised land, and he didn't.
No.
He couldn't deliver.
No.
He couldn't come through clean, and it happened to him what he was deserved to be happen to him. So, Spirit of God is the legacy, is the power. Mm-hmm. What is the Spirit of God? Think about it for a second.
This is something now beyond the senses, isn't it?
Exactly. Because we are so entangled with material stuff, materialistic stuff.
We're blind.
You know the expression in the States, it doesn't matter what you do for someone. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about for a second, for the sake of argument, let's talk about in a relationship, a mutual one, it doesn't matter the male or female doing for whoever, his partner,
sure.
She always asks, I'm talking about the Western mentality here, because we all live there, we know this.
Mm.
He said, by the way, what you have done for me lately? There is no satisfaction.
Mm. No satisfaction, right.
It doesn't matter what you do.
Mm.
Okay, you eat, you drink, you wear nice clothes.
Yeah, sure.
You drive nice cars.
You try to live a good quality of life.
There is no end to it.
Mm.
There is no saturation.
Right.
You always hunger for something. You're always thirsty for something.
Sure.
The Spirit of God, you have to pause for a second. What does it really mean? Mm. Why we don't ask ourselves, instead of saying, what you have done for me lately, what you have done for the reality, for the truth lately.
Lately.
That's or likely, like they call it.
Yeah.
What have you done for the truth, for the sake of truth? We always say, this is, it became kind of habit, and habit in the sense that you're not aware of it, this is not a good aspect.
Mm.
Okay? We always say, oh, for God's sake, for God's sake. We always swear by God whenever we need God in that sense in order to fulfill some material needs of ours. We always refer to God. But who actually God is? What kind of attention we pay to this important matter? Why we don't ask ourselves, what have I done for the truth lately? Spirit of God helps us to understand that beyond this worldly, materialistic aspect of life, there is something else to think about.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, you know, there are two, three elements that come into this.
You mentioned something about the school of thought.
Let me give you another example. Yeah, but what I'm seeing here is there's a combination of things in Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, which left others not able to say contrary to this, where they have been able to do it in the past. And that this is what I find is unique here.
Brother, let me give you an example.
Because, as you say, the spirit of Allah is like
I'm
going back
to explain that.
Yeah, it's going back to the fact that of the Quran, as you said, that these are those men who have made a pledge to Allah to give that correct pledge that they are going to do what the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, commanded them to do.
And it could be a broad way of understanding. Brother, this is a problem with material stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Think about a piece of rock, stone,
okay?
Solid. This is the lowest level of being, okay?
Sure.
And in the agricultural way of living, we use soil, which is a solid.
Sure, sure.
The lowest level of being.
Yeah, mineral.
We use it, mineral.
Yeah.
We use it to plant trees in it, vegetables. In order to make produce.
Yeah.
To be consumed by us, okay?
Sure.
This is one way.
Sure.
So solid for plantation. Then plantation is consumed by animals.
Animals.
Okay, cows eat grass.
Yeah.
They always done.
And
they
always will.
Right. Okay? Yeah. No matter what. No matter where.
Yeah.
No matter what century. Because last time we were talking about 20th century, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's ironic to think about, oh, when we're talking about 20th century, we think we are so modern. We are so sophisticated.
Yeah, yeah.
We're putting a class for someone else.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
We look at different people, different nations. You are inferior. We are superior to you. Why? Because we live in the 20th century. But it doesn't mean nothing, the way I'm trying to explain it.
That's a very good point.
Solid for plantation. Plantation for animal. Animal for consumption by human.
Human.
Human for what? This is my question. This is the problem with the materialistic mentality of looking at things, okay?
From that point of view.
But you have to think about it. You have to think about it and come with a good answer for yourself first. You have to satisfy your curiosity and your need in order to understand, in order to gain the true knowledge. I'm talking about the true reality here. Because beyond these five senses, there are so many different things. We call it spirit. Spirit is not material. Okay?
Right.
Remember a few decades away in Germany, okay, this doctor, whoever, in researcher, okay, this guy was passing away. They thought that they would come up with a new idea in order to prove that there is a spirit or there is not. They put this ready to pass away.
That's right. Yes, they did
on
that
on this scale.
Yeah,
okay, on this sophisticated digital scale. They trying to weigh the soul.
Yeah.
Or the guy who went to the moon and said, "Look, what did you see on the moon?"
Moon.
Said, "I saw everything but God." I mean, that's a shame. That's very sad.
Yeah.
Okay. So, plantation for animal for human consumption. What is the role of human? What happens? He consumes. Then what happens? This is a question you have to think about.
Yeah.
Everybody has to answer to find a good answer.
In other words, we're going back to what we call in Islam the fitrah. We're going back to this primordial nature.
The insight. Yes.
And this is what I'm saying, that Imam Khomeini makes that same statement, that same hadith, and yet the rest of the schools of thought are silent. And not only silent, they're picking up his picture, and they're also bearing witness to the fact mm-hmm. that this is a man who is the spirit of Allah of our time.
Exactly.
And beyond.
He was Ruhullah before he was Khomeini. Anybody mention his name back days, you know, during the 15 of Khordad, you're talking about 50 years ago. Mm. They call him Sayyid Ruhullah. And Sayyid in Arabic is someone who takes care of the rest of them.
Takes care of the rest of them. Right.
He's a master. He's a generous. He's a noble. He's a noble one. We don't pay attention, brother. This is a problem again. Mm. We don't pay attention to these words.
Yes,
we think this is only a name.
Yeah.
But name should have someone, you know, to be felt with.
But it has characteristics. It has a personality in itself.
It sure does. He was Ruhullah. Because he was Ruhullah, then if you are attached to God, in that sense that I tried to explain.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? Mm. If you are Ruhullah, number one, you are not scared of nothing.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter how many enemies in front of you. Mm. You know, one of the titles for the commander of the faithful. He was Karar. Why? Because he was Ruhullah at the same time.
Precisely.
He was Valiullah. Vali what? He was connected mm-hmm. with God. Mm-hmm. And God is not material. So it tells us that we shouldn't be trapped in the sense that anything we cannot see with the physical eye, anything we cannot hear with this earthly ear, okay, vahy, revelation, is some kind of hearing. But not everybody is
able to hear it. Yeah.
So if you cannot hear, if you cannot see it, if you cannot touch, if you cannot feel, if you cannot taste, therefore, it doesn't exist. That's not the case. How come that school of, you mentioned something very nice, the school of thought. Mm. The school of thought goes wrong when you put an end, put a ceiling to an understanding.
Well, that's very interesting. Mm.
If you limit yourself to something, therefore you cannot go beyond, you cannot fly.
Fly.
And the sky is the limit, because God is a limitless being, if you will.
And he has to open a limit.
And I'm trying to speak so simple.
Yeah,
yes.
But you're talking about a gate or a door that has to open to this limitless
exactly.
world.
Exactly. That's why Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon
him, says,
"Ana Madinatulam." I am the city of knowledge.
Beautiful.
And Ali Yum Baba.
Baba.
Ali is the gate. And anywhere you want to, anytime, brother, it doesn't matter where. Hmm. This is the manner of doing. Anytime you want to enter a building, a house, how are you going to do it? You're going to jump from the back wall. You're not going to do that. You're going to enter from the gate. But the gate should be the correct one.
Yes.
Okay? This school of thought stops itself from solid. It comes to plantation, which is fine, which is true.
True.
Okay? To the animal level of being, which is true.
True.
And the relationship between each, which is true.
True.
And from animalistic level, you come to human, but you stop there. This is where you go wrong.
No.
This is where you go astray. That's why you see suicide. In Islam, suicide is forbidden. You know why? There's a reason behind it. Anything God tells you, there is a reason behind it. The point is, you might understand. You should understand.
Same.
Or if you don't understand, you go look for the truth.
Truth. For the
there
hikmah.
Are people who understand.
Yeah, search for the wisdom.
Okay? Mm. And there might be a case that God is testing you, for example.
Sure.
But at least you understand that God is going to test you.
Test you.
There is no reason. There is wants to put your worshipness, if you will, your being a slave to God, your abd, okay, to God, by testing you. Mm. But there is reason for it. In Islam, suicide is forbidden. Why? Because you don't belong to yourself. This body is not yours. It's only a deposit.
In other words, what you're saying is Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, through the Bab, through this gate of knowledge.
Even through the right Bab.
The right
door. Mentioned something about source.
To the source.
I should add.
Source of the knowledge.
I should
which
add
is,
to this.
Yeah.
Source is not enough, brother. Source, singular.
Yeah, but what I wanted to.
Sources yeah. is not enough. Pure source.
Pure source, yes. The pure source, which is the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, himself.
And he's the pure source.
The pure source. But the point I'm making here is that he said this statement, this hadith of the Quran, to raise the bar for the other schools.
And he did indeed. Imam Khomeini.
That's why they couldn't argue with this point, because as you see.
You know how you judge a person, a personality? You know how you value someone? When he or she knows his value or her value.
Excellent.
You are not yourself. You don't belong to yourself. That's why you cannot.
Yes.
You cannot cease your life.
Yeah.
You cannot commit suicide. This is one of the unforgivable sins of all. You can't kill yourself. You don't belong to yourself. This pain is not mine. Can I? It doesn't belong to me. Can I own it?
No, you can't.
Can I own it, then destroy it? I can't.
No.
This is only someone gave it to me, okay, for a higher purpose.
A trust.
A trust. Very good. A trust. This is our soul, back to Ruhullah.
Mm-hmm.
Our soul belongs to him. This is a divine source. Divine spirit. Ruhullah in that sense.
Yes. And Ruhullah in this sense, in the sense of this great personality, has pledged the purity of this soul as a trust to fulfill that.
To the only pure source.
Source.
To begin with.
Yeah.
To begin with.
To begin with.
And to end up with, of course, because we are all holding responsible in front of him, in the eye of Allah.
Mm-hmm.
He's the final judge. Do you see that? It changes the whole story.
That has been the key success in terms of bringing the Muslim Ummah together to understand this importance of this concept of Walaya.
And if somebody follows this path, of course he's going to capture the hearts. Why? Because the hearts does not belong to
you. Yeah, because we mentioned that he's from the masses.
Brother Ejaz, again, hearts, mind you might manipulate it.
Yeah.
Okay, brainwash.
Yeah.
We have that.
Sure.
But hearts does not belong to me or you, or any government for that matter.
Exactly.
He
owns them.
He's the Muqallib al-Qulub. Remember the prayer that
Please quote from the Quran if you can, you know.
Muqallib al-Qulub.
Yeah, as an example.
Him.
Yeah.
And Qalb is something that it constantly moves.
It's dynamic.
It's struggle.
Yeah.
It's dynamic.
Yeah, it's within the self-struggle.
You know, in a medical term, I don't know, I'm asking, all right? We all hear about the different kind of cancers. Okay?
Yes, yeah.
All different kind of cancers.
Sure.
So far, I haven't heard about cancer of heart.
No, I've not heard about
it. I don't know. No. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I haven't heard about it, no.
But if that's the case, if that
they
would
They call
be
it
the
heart
case,
disease, for example.
Heart disease, but heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what
Heart attack,
say.
I would say.
Cardiac arrest.
It's something that you should think about, at least.
Mm.
You know? Because you when you logic with someone, okay?
Yeah.
You can't push it. You cannot go further.
Yeah.
But the thing is, okay, if someone gets to know somebody, gets to like or to love somebody, which we're supposed to do with God, we have to get to know him.
Know him.
Okay?
Yes.
Then we have to love him.
Yes.
And the love comes from knowledge.
Exactly.
That's why, you know, all this, you know, earthly love is not true love. Okay?
No, it's not.
Why? Because there is so many different kind of reasons for divorces.
Yeah.
If you say you love someone, how come you beat them up? The situation of love and hate.
Yeah.
You can love something, somebody, and hate it at the same time.
Yeah.
Am I wrong or what?
Sure.
I'm just raising this point in order to think.
Yeah.
Because the subject of this program is to understand.
Yes. But God's love is not.
We are going to try to understand.
Yeah, but God's love is not in that context.
In that context. Okay? So, number one, you have to understand. Number two, you have to love.
Mm-hmm.
In order to prove your love, then what have you done for me lately? God can ask us this.
Yes.
On a daily basis.
Yes. And he has the right.
Again. And he has the right because he created us.
Sure.
For what? He didn't need us. Did he?
No, he didn't.
He didn't.
No.
Why? He gave us favor. He did us a great, unimaginable, unexplainable,
favor.
Boundless favor.
Yeah.
So, if someone give you a car, for example, you know, car, whatever the price might be, how many times you're going to say, look, I really, truly appreciate you.
Yeah. How many times are you
going to say? How many times are you going to say that? If someone gives you, a camera, okay? How many times are you going to say, hey, guy, you're so nice.
Yeah,
to me.
You got
thank
it on
you.
Eid, for example.
But God gave us two eyes.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of camera is this?
Yeah.
It works for 80 years.
Yeah.
Without repair, in some cases, if you don't ruin it, if you take care of it, okay. But we don't. Do we tell God every day, God, thank you for eyes, thank you for giving me ears? We don't. This is
what does it say in the Quran?
This is the difference.
What does it say in the Quran that man is mostly ungrateful?
Brother, to make the long story short, and we can go on in the next program.
Yeah.
Okay. The difference between Ruhullah, between Imam Khomeini and me.
I'm
talking about myself here.
Sure.
Okay, is that he thinks about this stuff, and he believes in it, and he loves this stuff, and he acts upon it, period.
And that's why
and that makes the beauty.
Nobody could argue with him.
Nobody can argue. Nobody can touch it, because he's talking about the truth.
Exactly.
You might hide the truth one day, one moment, but you cannot fool everybody all the time.
And I love the fact that, you know, you say this, and I love the way it came. This is another thing. It's not something that Imam Khomeini
the way it was to come.
The way it was to come. Thank you for that. Thank you. I mean, there's an order to this. There's a logic you can follow with this as well. That certain events happen over that 10-year period as the Imam was living. He puts it into a context where people are beginning to see the unimaginable, beginning to taste the unimaginable, the impossible. As you said right at the beginning, the impossible is becoming a reality in the late 20th century. And as we get to the end, he puts it this context of this hadith after we see the fall of communism. He's already sowing the seeds to show that this is the path we've got to go on after you see the collapse of this. We'll discuss it in the next session. Thanks,
God willing, we do.
Thanks, Dr. Hasni, for the valuable contribution on this program. It's been really excellent and remarkable. Thanks a lot, because when we talk about this personality, really, we open up some really remarkable doors. And it leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and blessings and mercy of Allah be upon you all. And thanks for listening.
A passionate Indian teacher has turned a road into a classroom and houses walls into blackboards to make up for the prolonged school shutdown caused by COVID-19. Deep Narayan Nayak is working with nearly 60 students in a small tribal village in the eastern state of West Bengal. He started to teach students, most of whom are first-generation learners, last year, when all local schools closed under lockdown restrictions. Nayak says that he was worried about his students' education since many of them did not have access to smartphones or internet connection. But thanks to his initiative, his students can learn everything from popular nursery rhymes to the importance of masks.
We are teaching children everything, how to maintain social distancing, how to wear a mask, what is the importance of masks and hand washing. The children came forward and participated in this initiative, and they are also educating others.
The parents and villagers are grateful to Nayak, saying that they are happy their children are no longer wasting their time loitering around in the village. Nayak is now popular.